2250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state, and in your own backyard. This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. I'm Luke Mathers, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Two Wisconsin communities are getting more than $1 million in federal money to fight the opioid crisis. Nate Wegehout reports.
The funding from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is part of a broad approach to responding to the overdose crisis. Funding was given to communities around Marshfield and Kashina in the Menominee Nation, where deaths from methamphetamine are more common. The money will go toward deploying Narcan and funding programs to support families struggling with addiction. Over 9,500 people in Wisconsin died of an overdose between 2014 and 2021. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
More than 32,000 children in Wisconsin have been taken off Medicaid rolls since May. Renewal applications are required again now that the COVID-19 public emergency is over. William Park Sutherland is with the policy group Kids Forward. He says he's worried now that it's back to school time.
Kids that have stable access to health insurance are more likely to do better in school. They're more likely to be employed as adults. They're less likely to visit the emergency room.
National estimates show 3 out of 4 kids who lose Medicaid coverage are likely still eligible. Experts say many low-income families slip through the cracks due to things like frequent moves or lack of phone or internet service. The First Lady is talking up the Biden administration's efforts to fight cancer. More from Terry Bell.
The president's Cancer Moonshot Government Initiative aims to cut cancer deaths in the U.S. by half in 25 years. In Madison yesterday, First Lady Jill Biden visited Exact Sciences, where they make products that detect cancer early when it's easiest to cure it.
They need to know that help is available, how important it is to get screened and early protection. It can make all the difference between life and death.
Mrs. Biden also held a roundtable about screening and prevention at the Foundation for Black Women's Wellness. Cancer kills women and people of color disproportionately. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Efforts to limit what books are included in public libraries are on the rise across the nation. Wisconsin is experiencing these efforts too. A group of people in northern Wisconsin town of Iron River sent an anonymous letter to the community. The letter details a request to restrict the community's public library from promoting and even loaning out LGBTQ materials. The library denied the request, but the anonymous group plans to meet next week to discuss further steps the community can take. The group is considering a petition to remove the books or call for library board members to resign. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Luke Mathers, and this is Civic Media News.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what you need to know.
The Wisconsin Department of Health says the state is desperate for caregivers. The Wisconsin DHS is pushing to certify 10,000 new positions and sidestepping college and private companies to do it. They are offering those interested a chance to get trained and become eligible from their home. The DHS is working with the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay to create the program. Officials are hoping to fill 20,000 openings by next year. The Two Rivers Police Department is asking for your help in finding a thief. They say a man has been stealing from boats at local harbors. Two boats have been stolen from, one on August 16th and another on the 23rd. Two Rivers PD posted pictures of the suspect on their Facebook page. The police are asking people to secure any items on their boats as thieves tend to look for easy targets. Anyone who might have information on the crimes should contact the Two Rivers Police Department. Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
The Brewers are back in town. Good morning. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Brewers kick off a Labor Day weekend series with a 3-game set beginning tonight against the Phillies. The crew had a 9-game winning streak that came to an end after losing that series to the Cubs in Chicago. Christian Yelich.
You know, the streaks don't really matter. Those are games in the past. So you got to really prepare for the night in front of you and just take it one game at a time. And you got to look at it as you've won 0 games in a row. You know, every night's a big night from here on out the rest of the season. So we want to get to where we're going. We need to continue to play well and proud of the guys.
Freddy Peralta on the mound tonight against the Phillies' Zach Wheeler. First pitch at 7:10. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers kick off the season tomorrow at Camp Randall Stadium against the Bulls from the University at Buffalo. The kickoff time at 2:30. New head coach Luke Fickell on what he told his position coaches heading into this game.
My challenge to coaches each and every week, no matter what the game is, I don't want too much. It still comes down to who's going to play the fastest, who's going to play the hardest, and who's going to be the most aggressive. Some would say make less mistakes.
NFL, some key Packers players missing practice yesterday. Wide receiver Romeo Doubs with a hamstring and linebacker Devondre Campbell with an ankle. Last night at Lambeau Field, it was the Packers' Hall of Fame induction banquet for Jordy Nelson and guard Josh Sitton.
I wanted to play baseball because it was my favorite sport, and I wanted to play football for the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't get to play for the Cowboys, but I did get to win a Super Bowl in Cowboys Stadium.
Jordy Nelson remembering after the team had won Super Bowl 45.
Being on the field in the confetti with my wife and my son, and then eventually going in that back interview area, and I feel like getting that iconic shot that every dad who's a player and wins a championship wants when their son is sitting on their lap talking about a Super Bowl.
That's Packers Hall of Fame inductee Jordy Nelson. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
From I-43 to I-41, this is the Talk of Green Bay. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
like
it. Stop right on.
What's up, man? What's your name?
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, text us that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Earl. We made it to Friday.
But Calvin, we also made it to September.
That is a good
September
point.
September 1st.
Sandy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the official start of autumn
is... It's a big
is...
month. My birthday falls in September.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
it's a secret.
Oh, well, the autumn starts late September.
Yeah,
and so that's the horrific part of it.
We're on the downslope. I'm on the downslope in every way.
Hey, it's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. Let me make these announcements right quick. Before we start the show, Civic Media, home of the Badger football. Sandy, did you know we're home of Badger football?
I didn't, but that's exciting.
Yeah, we're home of the Packers, the Bucks, the Badgers, the Brewers.
Wow.
And anyway, all of these things you can hear on WRJN, 1400 AM, 99.9 FM. Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, streaming on WRJN on Civic Media. Coverage begins Saturday at 12:30. Kickoff at 2:30 against the Buffalo Bulls.
The Bulls?
The Buffalo Bulls.
Yeah, I see. That's the University of Buffalo.
Yeah. Like. I'm like, the Buffalo Bulls.
It's pretty close, yeah. But not exactly right.
Well, the Buffalo Bulls, it's kind of, you know.
It's macho.
Yeah.
A Buffalo Bull is one big hombre, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And on Monday, we're going to have a special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. We are going to be at Labor Fest. Calvin and I will be on duty, and that starts from 8, and it goes to 11 a.m., So join us, listen to us. We're going to be interviewing labor leaders from across the state.
Sandy will be celebrating Labor Day.
Yeah, and some political leaders as the conversation about labor. You know, Sandy, I was talking about this the other day. In the 60s, 30% of America
was unionized.
Was unionized.
It's 10% now.
Yeah.
And only 10% of American jobs are manufacturing jobs now. So, you know, most of the unionized people aren't actually even manufacturing
jobs.
They're service industry.
Yeah, they're service industry or they're tradespeople.
Or public employees.
Or public employees.
Yeah.
And it's not coincidental, Sandy, that, you know, 50 years ago, that you had that 30% of people in unions, and we talked about the middle class and how much people made and the benefits they had. It's not coincidental that once the unions left, that those kind of things left, is it?
No, I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of things going on. I read an article about Korea's birth rate. This is really a non sequitur seeming, but it's not. And their birth rate is now below, reproduction rate is below one, okay? 2.1 is the reproduction rate it takes to have a stable population, otherwise you're shrinking. And people are scratching their heads. They think about what social things are causing it. One of the biggest social things that's causing it is two-worker households, okay? Back in the in our day, when 30% of the people were unionized and all had middle-class incomes as the result, they had single-worker households.
Right.
You know, and so birth rates were easier to accommodate in that world. And in today's world, with student debt and the cost of daycare, it's pretty hard for a couple to decide to have children. And as a result, birth rates in all of the developed countries have declined dramatically.
You know, Sandy, the fact that unions have, and some say, well, it's on a rise, you know, I don't see it. I was talking about some statistics yesterday. The thing about the unions back then, Sandy, is that there was not just the people who worked in the union jobs, but all other jobs. It kind of raised the standard of workers who weren't unionized.
Yeah, I mean, the wage scale was brought, you know, all ships.
Yeah,
we floated higher in the higher water of the union wage scale. That was the comparison that everyone had. So, you know, that has had a big social impact, that's why I reached all the way to the fertility rate, because I think it's reached all the way to that kind of a impact on our society. But and we have now devolved, or maybe evolved, depending on whether you think it's going forward or backwards, to a situation where almost every household is a two-income, two-worker household, vastly different than the 1950s and 60s after World War II. And some would say, well, this is the rise of feminism and their equality, but it also has to do with income levels. And the fact is that double-income households have made it possible for employers to get a little more Scrooge-like in the income they pay to individuals, because households have two individuals now instead of one.
Well, you know, Sandy, we're never going back, right? I mean, those times of nostalgia with what we're talking about, where one guy could you know, make enough money to support his entire family, as my dad did with 13 children, my mother stayed home, those times are never coming back.
Your dad was very, very busy.
Well, he worked, and he worked.
I just meant,
I know,
working a day job and having 13 children is like it's night and day.
Yeah, but the other part of it was that my mom could stay home.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were able to. There was always food on the table. There was always a roof over our heads. You know, we always had clothing, and we always had the needs. The things that people needed, because, he wasn't alone. That was the norm.
Yeah, but I just happen to believe, much like I think student loans have facilitated universities raising tuitions at a rate far faster than inflation, because they had this customer base that could reach into a pocket, someone else's pocket, and pay them a lot of money and sacrifice their future for it. I think that the two-income households in America has allowed the business model in America to devolve towards hourly workers, to devolve towards fewer benefits.
Yeah.
And you know, because the pay of one person wasn't what a family had to rely on, and so the person that was receiving that income wasn't going to fight as hard for higher income. And they weren't going to jump from one job to another to get higher income because of the situation. So, you know, I think two-income households have been a mixed blessing. I think it's something that's logical, but I think that in the long run, we're going to have to adjust how those people earn their money and the extent to which they receive benefits. And I think the government's going to have to step up with respect to benefits.
So you say the government is going to have to step up. but it's the private side of things. Because the government, if you work for the government, you're going to get benefits.
Well, I'm talking about the government as an employer.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the safety net concept, right. You know, that employers have backed way off on benefits. Pensions backed way off on that. Healthcare benefits backed way off on that.
Right.
And even if you get healthcare benefits now, you contribute a mighty big dollar to it. You know, the idea of getting healthcare at work is the employer allows you to participate one half of the healthcare benefit cost or something like that,
yes.
Which in today's world is a very big cost. So there are a fair number of employees out there who are turning down the opportunity to get healthcare at work because it's just so darn expensive.
So these union people that understand, and so you see when you're at Labor Fest, what you'll see is families, and all these guys come and women, and they bring their families, and you see they are enjoying a great life in this country the way my generation used to.
Mm-hmm.
That still exists in pockets, but you know, back in my day, we were a part of Labor Fest where I worked, and all these other major companies were as well. Now what you see at Labor Fest are tradespeople.
Well, you know, I think another way that maybe the government needs to step up, someone has to step up and help to marry the people who need jobs or need better jobs with the better jobs that are available. Because the jobs report that came out just in the last day reveals that there are more job openings than there are people unemployed. Okay.
Right.
And so, and you can talk to almost any provider of trades in the country, and they will tell you they are short workers.
They're
looking for workers. They're looking, and they're willing to train workers. So what we need is a process, and maybe the government needs to facilitate this process, not make a permanent job of it, but make a temporary function out of finding the people to fill the jobs, helping find the people to fill the jobs, helping train the people to fill the jobs, because that's a function that government can provide. That's a win-win function for everybody.
You know, Sandy, and I think I would say that it only makes sense to me that we start focusing some in high school educations and giving direction and guidance to young people. And not, you know, directing all of them to major universities, because we see there's an overabundance of people who've graduated from universities and have not fallen into jobs that pay them commensurate with living a strong middle class lifestyle, even though they have these degrees.
Yeah. Well, you know, a place like MATC, there are post-high school educational processes that will set people up very well. And I think what's important is that the people who graduate from high school and matriculate into that do decide that learning is a lifelong process, so that we don't cut off or stifle the intellectual growth of our country. And yet people can live great lives in the trades, for instance. And there's no reason why tradespeople aren't the intellectual equals of everyone else and the educational equals of everyone else.
You know, Sandy, I can't remember the last time they outsourced an electrician or a plumber or steam fitter or any of those things.
Right.
And surely artificial intelligence is not going to replace them. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. My co-host Sandy Williams is here. You can join us at 844-967-2789. We'll be back.
Spin the globe and pick where you would go this summer at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa. We'll be giving away a vacation of your dreams with our Vacation Your Way promotion. Throughout the month of September, you can earn entries for your chance to be one of 10 lucky winners on September 30th, with one grand prize winner receiving a travel certificate for anywhere your heart desires. Only at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa, your place to play. For complete contest rules, see the Rewards Club booth at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa. Must be 21 or older to participate and enter the casino floor.
Show the world
world that age is just a number. Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa presents the golden days for those who are 50 and wiser. Turn up your excitement, because each Tuesday from July to December, you can earn 25 same-day slot points and $10 rewards play. Redeem up to four times. The golden days await at Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, where the only thing more exciting than your luck is the fun you'll have. For complete contest rules, see the rewards club booth at Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa. Must be 21 or older to participate and enter the casino floor.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly sunny today, with daytime highs approaching 80. Winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms. Tonight, lows level off around 62. Partly cloudy skies. Cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, slight chance for scattered thunderstorms. Daytime highs approaching 86. Dry with temperatures well above average Sunday and Monday, and highs from the low 90s to the mid 90s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 58.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, did you see Mitch McConnell?
I did see. I saw a video of it, yeah.
Nikki Haley had this to say yesterday, and part of it was kind of cruel. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley urge aging lawmakers to accept when it's time to go after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell froze up during a press conference in Kentucky on Wednesday. Haley, who is running in the 2024 Republican presidential primary, called McConnell's situation sad. She also said Thursday, where she described the Senate as the most privileged nursing home in the country. I think that was a bit.
Well, it might be cruel, but, you know, the fact is that the inability of people in power to hand the reins over to the next generation is startling, you know. And I saw a piece about when they were, I guess this whole McConnell thing has brought to light, brought up the fact of elderly people serving, you know, the Jesse Helms serving until he was 100.
And what was the other guy's name? Democrat, he was almost 100. He was the guy's name. He used to be a Republican, and he became a Democrat.
Bird,
Senate. Yeah,
yeah, Robert Bird.
He was almost 100.
Well, I mean, it's the list is not short. It's not short enough. Let's put it that way. And so, you know, I think that something needs to be done. I don't know what we do about it exactly, other than maybe the public needs to start being more vehement about wanting the, you know, people like older people can make great counselors. They can definitely, their wisdom can be tapped. They just don't need to be the ones holding the office, you know, and that's the problem. We've got the people holding the office are the ones that are maybe somewhat enfeebled, and they've got people behind them who want them to continue in office because that's their nexus to power, right? I'm powerful because I'm chief of staff to Mitch McConnell. Okay, so Mitch McConnell's got to stay there as long as possible for me to be that powerful person.
You know, Sandy, you use the verbiage holding the office. That's literally what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and it is time that you know, younger people with brighter minds, well, not brighter minds, but younger people who clearly, that was the time when those guys were young.
Well, here's the difference. Older people have a past they can look back on that gives them lots of wisdom, but they don't have a future to look forward to. Young people have a future that they need to look forward to and plan for, and they don't have the wisdom of the past. Sir. So we need to figure out a way to connect those two dots. And I think right now, unfortunately, what we've got is the young people in the background and the old people in the foreground. And I think we need to turn that around. And we need to have, I think the wisdom of the elders needs to be there to be tapped into. But the people who are going to live in the future need to be the people who plan the future.
You know, Sandy, you always talk about the baby boomers and hanging on and those kind of things. You always talk about that. But in this instance, people are voting for these people.
Yeah.
They continue to vote for them even after.
Well, you know what the biggest voting block is, though?
Yeah, the elderly. I mean, the
baby boomers.
The baby boomers, yeah. Well, all baby boomers aren't elderly. So.
But the baby boomers are still the biggest voting block, and they still vote at a high percentage. And so I would guess that they continue to have a disproportionate power at the polls as well.
You know, Sandy, it is... Now Mitch McConnell's doctors say he's okay. But, I've seen it twice, Sandy.
It's kind of like saying nothing happened on January 6th. You know, if you see it with your own eyes, you can diagnose the situation yourself. I mean, Mitch McConnell might be okay in a medical sense that everything's working. But everything isn't working 100% of the time because we've watched him now freeze twice, and it could well be the result of post concussion syndrome or what have you. But it's just a reminder that we've got an 81-year-old man. He's not even the oldest person in the Senate by probably a long shot, and we've got people like that who are fundamentally in charge of things. And the same is true with Joe Biden. No, Biden's only a year younger, I think.
There's no question that this is a time now where this needs to not be pushed in the background.
Right.
It's something that needs to be discussed because we are dealing with global issues the futures.
And we're dealing with a future, right?
And the
global issues all relate to the future, and we've got global warming, that's a futures issue. We've got electric vehicles, that's a futures issue. We've got everything's a futures issue. And we need people vested in the future to be more responsible for what we're doing. And I think the Democrats have to watch Mitch McConnell and the fact of his clear evidence of age. I'm confident that he won't run again. He's got to make the decision in the next 6 or 8 months whether he's going to run again. I'm pretty sure that decision will be helped to make that decision.
2026.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that the Democrats ought to know that in the shadow of this, subliminal to this, is the analysis of Joe Biden.
No,
right?
No question. I mean,
Joe Biden doesn't freeze in front of the camera, not yet, but the fear of something like that is now going to be implicit in the Joe Biden candidacy.
Because it can happen in a split second, right? Yeah. He could be fine today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, you can see that.
I'm just saying it's a subliminal, meaning, it's undercurrent issue in the campaign henceforth. It was already. Mitch McConnell makes it more so.
All right. Got to go to a break.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning, and the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The investigation continues into Thursday's deadly abandoned apartment building fire in Johannesburg, South Africa. At least 74 people killed, including 12 children, most of them believed to be homeless squatters. The city apparently owns the building. Millions of Americans hitting the roads and sky for this long Labor Day holiday weekend. And at the pump, a bit of sticker shock. Average gas prices are around $3.82 a gallon nationwide.
Airports across the country preparing for high volumes throughout the entire weekend. Chicago expecting particularly high numbers. This summer's travel volumes are even higher than the same period in 2019, marking this the busiest summer travel period on record.
ABC's Victor Oquendo in Miami. The TSA expects to screen 14 million passengers this weekend. Today's also a big day for federal student loan borrowers. The pandemic pause on payments ends today, with interest starting to accrue again, and the first payments start coming due next month. This is ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what Green Bay needs to know. A Green Bay pastor is headed to prison for child pornography. 40-year-old Corey Herthel pled guilty to sexual exploitation of a minor and will spend at least 15 years in federal prison. According to the U.S. Justice Department of Northeast Wisconsin, the people of the church told authorities Herthel and the child exchanged inappropriate videos at Herthel's request. He said he met the child while on a mission trip to Venezuela while the child was begging on the streets. Three people are safe after their boat capsized in Lake Superior. The Coast Guard was called around 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday and found three people clinging to the overturned boat. The incident happened 4 nautical miles from Saxon Harbor in Iron County. The Coast Guard made a point to remind boaters of the importance of life jackets and VHF radios for Mayday calls, which is faster than calling 911. Pete Schwabe for the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 News.
We're in the Civic Media Truth Booth at the Brown County Fair. We asked, and here's what you are telling us about living in the Green Bay area, attending the fair, and more.
Novalee Phelps. I work at the fair at Sheridan Amusements. I work with the kiddie rides. I set up, tear down, wash them, and run them, make little kids happy. I run the raceway. I set it up, tear it down. I help with other kiddie rides. I love putting smiles on kids' faces.
Thanks for sharing your story. Listen for more on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM, 98.3 FM, and the Civic Media app. And our website, civicmedia.us, and search for Truth Booth. And watch for the Civic Media Truth Booth coming to your town soon. When you think about early labor unions, do you think of Wisconsin? You should. The state's first labor union formed in Milwaukee in 1847 when the bricklayers organized, then the Carpenters Union in 1848. The National Labor Union didn't even form until 1866. A State Historical Society report shows Wisconsin's union members also pushed for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance legislation, becoming a model for other states. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup. Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
At 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, Ukraine is not going anywhere. You know, It's just not going anywhere. And on Sunday, Vladimir Zelensky says he is open to elections in Ukraine next year if the Western allies help. But he also made this statement, Sandy. Where is it at? That he believes that the United States is going to offer Ukraine the same kind of deal that we have with Israel, and where, you know, financially we still send some financial support and we pledge to support Israel militarily if need be. Where's that thought coming from? Do we have that kind of relationship with Ukraine?
Well, we don't, because Zelensky's apparently asking that we do, and we don't. You know, I think that the relationship with Israel is, it's a long history to it, and Israel was basically founded under the aegis of England and the United States. The treaty that set it up was basically grounded in the UK and the United States support of it. And so it's a different situation. Furthermore, there is the relationship of the Jewish state Israel with all of the Jews in America is a very close one. And so politically the connection there is sort of guaranteed in that case, in that way as well. But Ukraine, I mean, I can understand the situation in which the United States would stake out some guarantees to Ukraine, but that would be in the context of a settlement of this war. That would be in the context of Ukraine announcing its neutrality in a compromise with Russia in the settlement of the war, and in the context of an announced neutrality where Ukraine is not going to be a member of NATO, then it's going to need security guarantees of some sort. One of the reasons that Ukraine isn't a part of NATO is that Article 5 of NATO requires that all members of NATO commit essentially troops to the ground and do everything in defense of every member of NATO that they would do for themselves.
Right.
So the United States hasn't been willing to make that promise. We've flirted with it in terms of talking to Ukraine about it, but surely Germany and some other members of NATO were never going to let that happen. And so, you know, we aren't at the stage where we're willing to commit troops to the ground for Ukraine today. And so Zelensky, I think, is just off base thinking that we'll make the promise to do that in the future. I can see it happening in the context of a settlement. And I can see the settlement where some of the land would get ceded to Russia that was historically Ukraine in 1991 when Ukraine first broke off as a nation, so that, you know, maybe the Crimea and the Donbass stays with Russia. The rest of Ukraine promises its neutrality with a world guarantee of security, and the United States would clearly play a big role in that. That Ukraine, I can see having a very tight relationship with the West and with the United States in terms of getting rebuilt, getting support, et cetera. But that's a different context than the United States making this kind of Israeli arrangement with Ukraine in the context of today's war.
You know, Sandy, when I read it, I thought, well, we've kind of led Zelensky to believe, based on the fact that we keep supporting them, that, you know, that this is a long-term commitment, that we are going to...
Well, Zelensky's representing his country and doing it very well.
Right.
And, of course, what he wants for his country is everything that he needs and everything that could possibly be there.
And that we can provide.
That we could possibly provide.
Right.
So he wants all of that. And I don't blame him for that. It's just we got to figure out what we're willing to do, what's in America's interest, what's in the strategic interest of America, what's in the world interest,
well,
essentially.
Well, we've got America divided on it. And so there's no way I can see that happening. There are just as many people in this country who are as opposed to what we're doing in Ukraine, I think, as there are who say that we should continue.
Certainly the numbers of people in America, I think if you went out and asked people whether Ukraine was in the right and Russia was in the wrong, you'd get almost unanimity that Ukraine was in the right. But when you ask them how much should we be doing for Ukraine? How much money should we be spending? Blah, you know, that begins to winnow away at what people are willing to say about what we ought to be doing. And that's, I think, a correct recognition of the strategic interest of the United States. You know, and so I think what's happening is that members of the public are waking up, at least in their minds, to the notion of setting up priorities for America. And those priorities need to include just where should we be spending tens of billions of dollars of our money to do what?
Well, that's because, Sandy, the American people are hurting.
Yeah.
You know, if the American people weren't hurting, it might be a different story.
Well, Joe Biden just is asking for a $10 billion or $12 billion addition to the FEMA funding, okay? And maybe you're going to have to fight for it.
Right.
Whereas if $12 billion going to Ukraine happens overnight, with barely a vote. So that, to me, is a demonstration of some disproportion here. The emergency risk to Americans from the natural disasters that FEMA is designed to support us for is subject to dispute about funding, possibly. But we can send tens of billions of dollars abroad to the country Ukraine, and we don't even really know what government will result from this war or exactly what sort of government we were defending in the first place.
You know, Sandy, you just pointed it out in that statement succinctly. That's it. You know, again, there's going to be a struggle to get the $10 billion to help American people. And you know, we just opened up the pocketbook. And I think Americans don't really know what's going on. And they really don't even focus and not paying attention to the amount of money that keeps going to Ukraine.
Right.
And it's a bottomless pit. It's not a bottomless pit, but it seems like it's a bottomless pit. And it's part of this is it's like Republicans are saying, no, we need to look a little closer. Sandy, I'm on the side of the Republicans on what is happening with Ukraine. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm on the side of skeptics, and I think most of the skeptics are Republicans right now. I think the Democrats have sort of locked themselves into the neocon thought process. You know, the notion of us expending the kind of dollars we need to expend, I know that KJ would call in and say that we need to defend democracy wherever it exists, but that is a carte blanche expenditure program that we can ill afford, particularly when we've got people wanting to figure out what we need to cut in our budget in order to fund FEMA the next $10 billion. FEMA is an insurance policy against natural disasters that should be essentially automatically funded at the level required. And yet it's subject to some dispute. So, you know, I just think that we've got a democracy in our own country that's at risk. Actually, the greatest risk to American democracy right now, I think, rests at home. It rests in the courtrooms. Ongoing disputes right now in courtrooms are taking up the issue of the defense of American democracy.
You know, Sandy, you have constantly talked about Crimea and the importance of Crimea.
To Russia.
Yeah.
It's a very important place, yeah.
So in today's Newsweek, Crimea remains the grand prize in Ukraine's efforts to defeat Russia's full-scale invasion of the country. The former commander of U.S. Army Europe has told Newsweek as Kiev's troops continue to slow southward push that could prove pivotal in shaping the conclusion of the 9-year conflict, thought to have claimed hundreds of thousands of lives, that Crimea is still... As long as Crimea is what it is and Russia has that stranglehold on it, this is never going to come to an end if Ukraine is still planning on saying, we're going to take Crimea back, and that it can never end as long as they keep saying that, because Russia has such control over Crimea.
Well, I think Crimea is the prime playing card that both sides are playing the game about.
They can't.
Well, they both can't have it, and I don't think Ukraine really thinks they can recover it. But I think Ukraine needs to be able to threaten Russia with the notion that they might recover it. First of all, taking Crimea back would involve something like occupying a bit of a foreign country. Crimea is filled with Russian speakers and has Sevastopol in it, which is the Russian fleet warm water port. And so there's a great deal of Russian influence in Crimea. And I think one of the reasons that it was allowed to slip away so quickly in 2014 was the fact that it had this highly Russianized kind of it was a Russian-speaking area that had been traditionally part of Russia until 1954, and that it was different in some respects than the rest of Ukraine. So I think that Ukraine will continue to talk about it. It will continue to threaten to take it over. It will continue to make military incursions into Crimea, because one of the prime playing cards it has in a negotiated settlement with Russia is the threats that it can make to Crimea, because Crimea is the most important thing as far as Russia is concerned.
You know, Sandy, it's at a point right now where Putin knows the value of that, and Zelensky knows the value of it. But if that's going to be the stickling point, and Ukraine is going to say, as Zelensky has said, we want it all back, the United States at some point in time is going to come to a realization, as long as they're saying they have to take that back, this is never going to end.
Well, interestingly, it was probably a year ago, Blinken said that taking back Crimea was beyond the goals that the United States felt were probably reasonable to expect. I think we've sent messages already that we don't believe that we can tolerate supporting the war that would be required to take Crimea back. I think we've sent that message, and I think I've always thought that was the fact. Okay, that taking Crimea would be a very huge military problem, and then it would be a long-term problem after a war. Even if Ukraine won the war, it would be a long-term problem after that war.
And it could never happen without the financial support of even thinking about taking Crimea back of the United States,
well,
right?
I mean, absolutely. The Allied support would have to continue at least the level that they currently have. I mean, they aren't even fighting in Crimea right now. They're fighting at the edge of Crimea. What they're trying to do is cut the land bridge that allows for the easy supply of Crimea from Russia to try and that alone would be a pretty significant playing card. If they can cut through to the Sea of Azov and cut off the land bridge to Crimea, then Crimea is made more vulnerable, and maybe it would be at that point that Russia would decide that negotiation was a good idea.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
We're in the Civic Media Truth Booth at the Brown County Fair. We asked, and here's what you are telling us about living in the Green Bay area, attending the fair, and more.
Novalee Phelps. I work at the fair at Sheridan Amusements. I work with the Kitty Rides. I set up, tear down, wash them, and run them, make little kids happy. I run the raceway. I set it up, tear it down. I help with other kitty rides. I love to put a smile on kids' faces.
Thanks for sharing your story. Listen for more on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM, 98.3 FM, and the Civic Media app. And our website, civicmedia.us, and search for Truth Booth. And watch for the Civic Media Truth Booth coming to your town soon.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Fig Newton lover,
of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly sunny skies and calm this afternoon with a high of 80. South winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms. Tonight, lows level off around 62, partly cloudy. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms again. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 86. Cloudy skies expected. Dry and turning warmer Sunday and Monday with highs from the low 90s to the mid 90s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 60.
Broadcasting from the City Deck Studios on North Washington Street, the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thank you for taking my call. Crimea is a symbol of weakness from another Democrat president. When he did nothing with the red line, and that was President Obama, Biden shows his age all the time that he's not qualified and well enough. You speak about someone who's functional and not functional, shakes hands with air, can't find his way off a stage, and he can't go off teleprompter without talking about his kitty cat like he did in Maui, when those peoples were in a disastrous situation. Shameful that your party still wants him to run for another 4 years. He's not functional. You know, the way he handled the 13 Gold Star families, or he hasn't even commented about those people. It just blows my mind that 70% of your own party doesn't want him to run. But you won't let them debate. You won't let them primary.
Wait.
And Ukraine is a symbol of his weakness from Afghanistan. Remember, he said he's the only one that could go toe-to-toe with Putin. Well, Ukraine, and we couldn't use that $87 billion that he left behind in Afghanistan.
How much did he leave behind? Wait, CJ, how much did he leave behind?
$87 billion worth
of equipment. No, CJ, you can go and look. You've got a decimal point. It's $8.5 billion, okay? Not you must have been listening and not reading when you've been saying that number for a long time. So I decided to go back and do some research on it, and the estimates are between 7, the Pentagon said 7. Now the people who are critical are saying $8.5 billion. But go ahead, CJ. Go ahead with the rest of what you have to say.
What about Bagram Air Base? What about that, Sandy? Our most strategic air base in the entire region, he gives it to China.
China's not occupying. Thank you so much for calling, CJ. Do we have another caller?
We do.
Oh, good. Okay. Thanks, CJ.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. How you doing, man?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Really quickly, I read this morning, I'm not sure it was in the Independent, that Putin is making the Satan 2 ballistic missile to put that into action. And I guess that particular ballistic missile is able to carry up to 10 nuclear weapons. It was just announced this morning. So my concern is, as we see this slowly escalating between, you know, obviously some of the NATO countries, you know, they're going to supply U.S. authorized to have the
F-16.
To be sent, and they will train the Ukrainian pilots to do what they have to do. My concern is this, is that, you know, this right now is a proxy war. And so while we don't technically have U.S. soldiers right now, you know, fighting Russians, you know, toe-to-toe, and Earl has mentioned this in the past. I mean, there are only so many Ukrainian soldiers that are going to be able to put up the fight. And there has been, from what I understand from what the Pentagon has said, is, you know, there's been tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers that died. Russians, of course, you know, there's been a lot of those that have died. And I've been reading more about, you know, what the Abrams tanks that we're going to be sending over. There's problems with that tank. I didn't realize how old that particular tank is. It was built in the early 1990s and it uses a turbine engine. And it only can last, it only has about 8 hours of time before it has to be refueled, as opposed to having a newer diesel engine that might be partially electric where it could run around for 24 hours. So, and I guess it leaves a tremendous thermal image because of the heat that this turbine engine is. So they potentially could be easily picked off. And the other thing that's happened that I've noticed, Andy, and I'm not sure if you read about this, is that the Russian military now, they've been able to produce 24/7 the ammunition that is needed to continue this war, whereas the United States, right now, we do not have that ability in doing so, and it would take months to get it up to capacity if that were to happen. So I am definitely concerned that, you know, as this slow escalation has been, you know, going up and we're using more and more advanced stuff, that this potentially could bleed over into some NATO countries, and then you got a full-out complete war. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that's what it seems like, where it's all right, Dave, like a chess match.
Let's let Sandy respond.
Well, that was my concern on day one of this, which was that by the United States sort of setting the table for Ukraine to thumb its nose at Russia, with Ukraine being in the clear geographic sphere of influence of Russia, that we were essentially setting bait in a trap, but we might be trapping ourselves. Russia invaded, which in a way put Russia into a world corner, but unless we're willing to back Ukraine, what we're really doing is supplying Ukraine as long as there are Ukrainians to fight. So we're helping Ukraine fight to the last Ukrainian, which is and then the outcome of the war isn't going to be successful for Ukraine in that circumstance. So we started a game without an end game, and that's what I was talking about last Friday, was the inability of America to apparently have end games in mind when we set down a road, whether it be foreign policy or our domestic policy. And that the road that we set down and are now involved with in Ukraine does have the definite potential of bleeding over. You know, Poland sits right there with Belarus. Lukashenko is currently sitting on his hands pretty effectively, in spite of getting pressure from Putin, I'm sure, to become more involved. But we also have Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, countries that are right there, tucked up into Russia. So yeah, we're in dangerous terrain right now.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. The Todd Alba Show.
I see the silhouette of Todd Alba, who still hasn't figured out that maybe a TV person could help, you know, set this whole thing up.
For whatever reason, yeah. StreamYard's video is just deciding that the room is too bright.
When has Todd Alba been accused of being too bright? I mean, really there? I'm like, where's Aaron with the rim shot?
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave.